Night they was reported for the Chicago Bar out of Weymouth.
All right, Mr. Gilmore. Let's begin. All right, so today's daf is daf yud. We're going to start from the Mishnah on the bottom of Tesamud base. So says the Mishnah, new parak. Hatshuva mahayu osimba. Now I will say again, interestingly enough, until now we've been very focused on the matter of collection, to a certain degree, who's obligated, and really intervals of withdrawal. Now the Mishnah is going to go get into discussing what we actually use this money for. So the Mishnah says, also what's amazing is, just when you read this, keep in mind the amount of financial transparency that occurs within the Beis HaMikdash. So usually, you know, governmental entities are not usually the most transparent. And what's amazing over here is the Mishnah is explicit in telling you where all of the money went. It says the Mishnah, Truma Mahari Osma, what did they do with the Truma? Lokin Bat Midin Umusafin Viniskeyem. In this game, they would go ahead and they would purchase carbon tamid, musafin, niskehem, the libations, ha'omer u'shtei halechem, the carbon ha'omer and the shtei halechem. Also, the shtei halechem is the offering of two loaves that was brought on Shavuos. The lechem aponim, of course, refers to the bread on the shulchan. The chol karbanos atzibor, and all communal karbanos. Okay? Shomei svichen b'shvius, notlin scharam u'chmas lishkavos. Another very interesting case. If you look at the Tiklin Charetim, it's all the way on the bottom of the page, about three lines from the bottom. Svichin, ha'olim me'alein. Svichin also means aftergrowth. So growth that comes up by itself. Shenishu b'katzir, v'nosnu schar l'shomer she'im l'ragle behemos misham, shenetzrachim l'omer u'beis ha'lechem, she'inon bo'en ela minachadosh. I mean, all right, supposed to listen to this. It was very interesting. It's a very interesting challenge that came up during the Shemitah year, which was the bringing of the carbon omer. Because on one hand, during Shemitah, everything is hefker, which means that when it's hefker, anyone could take it. Animals are going all over the place. What's the problem? The problem is you do need to safeguard some amount of barley in order to have for the carbon omer. So they would hire watchmen that would be there essentially to watch whatever patch of barley they needed, that animals shouldn't walk there. They would even tell people, you know, do me a favor, I know that technically it's hefker, but if you don't mind, we're kind of trying to save, put this aside for the carbon omer. So obviously we'll say that is a paid position. We'll discuss why they didn't want volunteers. So the people who would watch the carbon omer were also paid from the Trumas Alishka, from the Chatzi Shekel. Rabbi Yossi says the truth is, even if you want to volunteer, you could also volunteer and be an unpaid watchman for the Karban Omer. Amrulo, they said to Rabbi Yossi, Af Ata Omer, but you also have to agree. First of all, take a look at Tiklin Charet for just a moment. Shomer Chinam, Va'af Shekana Osam in a Hefker, Kisha Shamran, the carbon yachin mishtana mishlashel tibor. And I will say, what we're going to see is a fascinating dispute. And the dispute is, could something that is privately owned be truly transformed into a communal offering? And I will say, what's the chiluk over here? If a guy is on the payroll of the Beis HaMikdash, so he's owned by the Beis HaMikdash at the time that he's on the payroll, which means that there's no concern that he's privately acquired the barley. On the other hand, if a guy is volunteering, then what? He's his own person, and it's possible that he may acquire the barley on his own behalf, for himself, and then in turn go ahead and give it over to the Beis HaMikdash. And we'll see the fundamental machlokes between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi is whether or not such a mechanism is actually effective. So obviously we know it's effective in certain areas. For example, we know that a person could bring a carbon, a person could transfer his animal to the Beis HaMikdash, but that's different because, remember, he's not making a communal property. That's my carbon, I'm just giving to the Beis HaMikdash. Shiloh over here is carbon Omer has to belong to the Tzibor. Is the Yochid, can you actually take something that was individually owned and transform it into the property of the collective? So the Gemara goes on. So therefore the Chum said to him, Av Ata Omer, you also have to agree, Shein Ba'in Ela Mishal Tap of Yud, Ela Mishal Tzibor. So he said to Rabbi Yossi, we appreciate your sentiment of volunteerism, that people are able to volunteer, but at the end of the day, you also agree that the carbon Omer has to come from communal offerings, and therefore what they're saying is they're objecting to this idea of volunteering, because then what will end up happening is you'll have to transform an individual entity into a publicly owned entity, And that's particularly problematic. We'll see that more in the Gemara. So says the Gemara, Mara'a zman atse kohanim v'ha'am limaros. So we'll say here, the Gemara is actually quoting from the Mishnah in from the Mishnah Maseches Tainis. And the Mishnah Maseches Tainis brings down that there were nine different families that pledged wood to the Ma'arocha, to the pyre in the Beis HaMikdash. And on the day that they pledged, so they would have like a yomtiv. They would have a yomtiv for themselves. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, Ela b'sha'a shal Yisrael minak. Although what happened? When the Jewish people came back from the diaspora, v'lo matzu eitzim belishka. There was no wood. There was no wood in the lishka. There was no wood ultimately in the temple chambers. V'amdu elu v'nesnadvu eitzim mishal atzman. And these nine families, and the Mishnah records their names, these nine families went ahead and pledged of their own wood, umasrum letzibor, and they went ahead and they gave it over to the tzibor. The karvu mehen karbanos tzibor, and they used these karbanos. Ultimately, you use this wood for karbanos tzibor. The hisnu imahem nevi'im, and the prophets then instituted shevenein. The prophets among them instituted shafilu lishka melea eitzim, even if the Beis HaMikdash is flush with wood. And these families still continue to make good on their pledge to go ahead and give wood. That carbono should only be brought from the wood that they brought. So we'll say again, there was incredible hakaras l'tov to these families that they stepped up in a time of need. And therefore, the ma'isa, again, even if there was plenty of wood, the wood would have to come from their pledged wood. Amr Rabbi Acha, and I will say again, that what do you see from here? The reason why the Gemara is bringing this up is because here's a perfect case of individually owned property that is then being converted into for communal use. And in fact, if you take a look at the Tiklin Charetz, it's on the right-hand side. On the right-hand side, Umasram Letzibur, Sheyeheshal Tzibur, V'zehu Da'amar V'hikrivu Mehem Karbanos Tzibur. So this is what it means ultimately when it says they actually took privately owned property and then converted it into publicly owned property, tzibor property. If you look at Tiklin Charetin again, Mishal Atzman, Shei Karban Nidavasam Kirisnan Likaman Parakbav, Ha'omer Harei Alayetzim. So mostly you see over here that clearly from this case is it was an established practice that we're able to take property that is owned privately and yet convert it into publicly held property. Mostly just so you should understand, The issue at play over here in this machlokis and the Mishnah between Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim is, in order to allow privately owned property to become tzibor property, you really have to rely on the intent of the giver. And sometimes that's a little bit dangerous because certain things are invalid if they're not communal, if they're not communal in nature. So for example, if I pledge my barley to the Karban HaOmer, but at the end of the day, I'm not really giving it b'leif shalim. It actually compromises the integrity of the karban. So therefore, the rabbanon are of the opinion that we don't like to take privately owned property and use it for communal needs. We like to take either hefker property or originally communally owned property. But on the other hand, Rabbi Yossi clearly holds that no, we could rely on the das of the individual. So here the Gemara is bringing an example of a situation where lemaisi, you have something that is initially privately owned, but then ultimately converted into communal use. So the Gemara goes on. Amar Rabbi Acha, so the Gemara is bringing this Mishnah from Tainis as a proof that this process works, that you can take privately owned property, convert into communal use. Gemara says, that's not a good raya. Amar Rabbi Acha, to Rabbi Yosihi. To Rabbi Yosa, Omer, Av Harotze Misnadev Shomer Chinom. So I'll say, so the Gemara answers, this is Rabbi Yosa. Rabbi Yosa is Rabbi Yosa. This reflects the view of Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah, and Rabbi Yossi is one in the bless you. Rabbi Yossi is one in the Mishnah who says that and bless you that an individual could volunteer to go ahead and watch the barley, which means that even though what he may acquire it as an individual, he can repledge it ultimately to the Beis HaMikdash afterwards. So therefore, this reflects view of Rabbi Yossi that individually owned property can in fact be given over for communal needs. So the Gemara says Rabbi Yossi b'shem Rabbi Ila. So who misnadev Rabbi Yossi b'shem Rabbi Ila? Divrei hakolhi. So the Gemara says maybe not. Maybe in fact that this Mishnah in Maseches Tainis can actually reflect everyone's view. How so? Ma pligin. When do the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi disagree? V'gufo shel karban. They disagree when it comes to the actual karban itself. Meaning, when it comes to mamish karban itself, that's when they have a disagreement of can you take something that's individually owned and convert it for communal needs. However, ababa machshirei karban. When it comes to machshirei karban, say, so what are machshirei karban? Machshirei karban are things that are wood, right? Things that are not the karban itself, but obviously an integral part of the karban process. When it comes to machshirei karban, everyone agrees, kol amamodi shuhu mishdane, karban yochid, the karban tzibur. Everyone agrees that when it comes to machshirei karban, you can take something individually owned and commute it and convert it into a communal item. Tani, similarly, we have another case. Isha sha'asas akitonas libna. And we'll say this is the mother of a Kohen Gadol who made one of the big day kahuna for her son. She made one of the big day kahuna for her son. So what happens? So ksheira, the halacha is that such a garment is kosher. Ubilvad shetim serena letzibor. As long as what? As long as she wholeheartedly gives it over to the community. We'll say, remember, big day kahuna have to be owned by the tzibor. Have to own the community, reflecting above the idea that the Kohen is the servant of the community. So she can make, mom wants to make it, that's fine, but she has to go ahead and fully give it over to the tzibur. So what do you see from here? That privately, if you think about it, by the way, it must have been something amazing when your son became the Kohen Gadol. I'm saying it's not a doctor or a lawyer, but you know, imagine that. I'm just saying it's an amazing thing. So you can imagine the nachas of a mother of wanting to go ahead and make that big day kahuna for her child. Okay, so she could do it, but she has to give it over. What do you see from here? That privately owned property can in fact be converted over to communal property. So the Gemara says, "Am Rabbi Acha, Rabbi Yosi." No. Again, that reflects the view of Rabbi Yosi. Rabbi Yosi, Amar Afarotzem is Nadev Shomer Chinam. So the Gemara says, oh, because that's Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah says that, again, the individual could watch the Karban Omer because, or the barley, because private property can become a public property. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi, Bishim, Rabbi Ila, Divrei Akoli. No, maybe not. Maybe, in fact, it can be reflective of everybody's view. How so? Ma pliginon, begufo shel karban. Again, when do the Rabbanon and Rabbi Yossi have their machlokes? That's only with the Karban itself. Carbon, but when it comes to, we'll call it, we'll say, secondary carbonic activities, called amamodi, everyone agrees, shumishtane. Everyone agrees that you could change a carbon yachid, le carbon seaboard. So we'll say again, big day kahuna will essentially be just like eitzim, just like wood. And therefore the machlokis is only in the carbon itself. But for secondary items, like big day kahuna, like wood, everyone will agree that l'maisa you could convert private property into communal property. The Gemara goes weiter. Masnisin pligi al Rabbi Yossi. There's a braisa that argues on Rabbi Yossi. What's the braisa? Osan hayomim nohagin bishas carbon. V'shlolo b'shas carbon. I was like going back to the Mishnah and Tainis that we said before. So the Mishnah and Tainis said that when these nine families would bring the wood, on the day that they would pledge the wood, that day was a yomtiv for them. It's actually quite beautiful. The day that they pledged with the Beis Hamikdash was a yomtiv. So how so? So the Gemara says, Osan yomim, those days, noagin b'shas karban, v'shalo b'shas karban. They applied at a time when there were karbanos and when there weren't karbanos. We'll both say, these families kept these days as yomtiv, as yom tovim, even when there wasn't the Beis Hamikdash. Even on his base mitosh, so the Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi says, Anan Einan Noagin Ella Bishas Karban Bilvad. Rabbi Yossi says that no, they only went ahead and celebrated at the time of the Karban itself. Now, Rabbi Yossi, here's what's interesting. Well, the reason why the Gemara is bringing this down is the Gemara wanted to suggest that the wood, the offering of the wood, is what's called Machshirei Karban. What the Gemara is suggesting over here is the fact that they are celebrating in such an acute fashion, and we'll discuss what the celebrations were. Actually, the Gemara is not going to discuss them. I'll tell you, Tehillim Chanan rings down, they wouldn't say Tachnun, which of course, that's cause for celebration for anyone, right? And so they wouldn't say Tachnun, right? They would not deliver Hespedim, they would not deliver eulogies, they wouldn't fast. We'll see a dramatic example in just a moment. What the Gemara is suggesting is the fact that they celebrated the day of their wood offering as such a Yom Tov is indicative of the fact that what? That this is really treated more like karbanos than anything else. And yet, what do we see? That they were able to take private property and convert it into communal use. So the Gemara says, v'od minata, listen to this. Tisanya, Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Bei Rabbi Tzadok. Anu hayinu mi bei sanoa ben binyamin. We were of the family of Sana'a, the son of Binyamin. And I will say, this is one of the families that used to pledge wood. And when would they pledge wood? They would actually pledge wood on the 10th of Av. That was their day. So for also for the family of Sana'a ben Binyamin, the 10th of Av was always a major, major Yom Tov. Okay, so what happens? Where the family of Sana'a ben Binyamin? V'chal Tisha B'Av lihios b'Shabbos. And one time Tisha B'Av fell out on Shabbos. Vidachinu osa lematzei Shabbos. Well, so we know what happens if Tisha B'Av falls on Shabbos. It's a nitcha. You push it to matzei Shabbos on Sunday. And this is wild. V'hainu mis'anin v'lo mashlimin. And what we did is we went ahead and we fasted, but we did not go ahead and finish out the fast. Take a look at the Tikkun Charetin for just a moment. So he writes over here, v'his'inu below. It's actually his gear says v'his'inu. He says, u'bebavli sham esayim mei shiyom tov shalanu haya. But I will say, what's amazing is, so because, here's, listen to how fascinating this is. So because this day was their Yom Tov, and because Tisha B'Av was a nidcha, right? Remember, I will say, anytime that Tisha B'Av is pushed off from its real calendrical date, there are certain leniencies, by definition, inherent in the fast. So the family of Sana'a ben Binyamin said that when Tisha B'Av was a nidcha, we would begin the fast, but we would not finish it. Why? Because ultimately, for us, Tisha B'Av was our familial Yom Tov when we offered our wood. So also, the point the Gemara is making over here is that it's not so poshut. It's not so poshut to say that the giving of the wood is simply machshirei karbon, because you see from the fact that they celebrate it as such an intense Yom Tov that what? That it almost has the status of a karbon itself, which then leads us back to our fundamental machlokis in the Mishnah, as to whether or not you can go ahead and take privately held property and ultimately convert that into communal karbonos. Okay, so therefore the Gemara doesn't fully resolve it. So the Gemara goes weiter. HaOmer u'shtei alechem v'lechem apanim v'chol karbonos tzibor. So the Gemara says, Masnisa Drabishma Amar, Ein Omer. Actually, let's go. Taman Taninon. Skip the parentheses. Before us, we learn the following. Kol Karbanos Hayochid Vahatzibor, Bo'in Min Ha'aretz U'Min Ha'chutz La'aretz. So we'll say very interestingly so. In general, all Karbanos, bless you. Individual Karbanos, communal Karbanos, come from Eretz Yisrael and from Chutz La'aretz, Min Ha'chadosh or Min Ha'yoshan. From the new wheat or from the old wheat. Also remember, Chadash and Yashan refers to grain before or after Pesach. So let's say, for example, any grain that has taken root since last Pesach is considered to be Chadash until this coming Pesach. After this coming Pesach occurs, after this coming Pesach, all of that wheat is converted into Yashan. So the Gemara says, under normal circumstances, we don't really have a Hakpada. We don't really have a hakpada. We're not really so concerned in terms of where the items that are used for sacrificial items actually come from. Eretz Yisrael, Chutz La'aretz, Chadash, Yashan, with a couple of exceptions. Chutz, Mina Omer, Ushtei Alechem. And also with the exceptions of Omer, Karban Omer, remember the barley that's offered up on the second day of Pesach. Shtei Alechem are the two loaves that are opened up on Shavuos. She'in Boin Ela Mina Chadash. They have to come from Chadash. Umin ha'aretz, and they have to come from Eretz Yisrael. But I will say, if you take a look, not yet. So the Gemara says the following: Rabbi Chuna, Bishin Rabbi Yirmiyah, Rabbi Shmali, Rabbi Shmal Omer. This reflects even Rabbi Shmal, because what does Rabbi Shmal hold? Rabbi Shmal Omer, Ein ha'Omer ba min Asuria, that Omer can't come from Surya. But I will say, if you take a look at the Tiklin Charetin, he says Misuria. Dehi miktas Eretz Yisrael koshekin mikol chul mamish. So we'll say Surya, I guess you could translate it as Syria. Understand that David HaMelech expanded territorial borders to include even present-day Syria. That's how much David HaMelech extended territorial borders of Eretz Yisrael. However, these conquests were always interesting in a halachic fashion because they were what were called kibush yachid. Kibush yachid means David HaMelech was never commanded to go to war to conquer these areas. If a king chooses to go to war to expand the territories of Eretz Yisrael, that's certainly his prerogative. But it wasn't a commanded war. Because it wasn't a commanded war, there's a question of the sanctity of those conquered lands. And it has multiple ramifications. It has ramifications for Shemitah. It has ramifications for Trumas and Maestros. And here, clearly, it says it has ramifications for Karban HaOmer. So, for example, Surya will not be considered as part of Eretz Yisrael for Omer purposes. So Omer can't come from Surya. Taman Tanina, we learned furthermore later on, we learned there, Eser Kiddushos, there are 10 different levels of Kiddushos. Eretz Yisrael, Nikudeshus Mikol Ha'aretzos. So Eretz Yisrael is holier than any other land. Umay Kiddushos, and what is the holiness of Eretz Yisrael? Shemevien Mimeno HaOmer VaHabikurim Ushtei HaLechem. Because from Eretz Yisrael we bring the Karban Omer, the Bikurim, we'll say first fruits, Shtei HaLechem, the two loaves, Mashein Kein Mevien Kein Mikol Ha'aretzos. So we'll say, and this is not, this of course is not true by all of the other lands. Right, there's no Bikurim, no Omer, no Shtei Alechem. Rabbi Chiya, Bishin Rabbi Yirmiya, Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel, says, Ein ha Omer ba minas Surya. So we'll say this reflects the view of Rabbi Shmuel, because Rabbi Shmuel holds the Omer can't come from Surya. Taman Taninon, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Ma, Rabbi says, it's actually very interestingly mod. Ma Choresh Rishus, Af Ketzir Rishus. Now we'll say, what is this referring to? Take a look at the Tiklin Charetin. Disnan Rabbi Shmuel Omer, you see that? It actually says Disnan Ri. Disnan Ri Omer Machorish, Vihir Parakama Demoid Cotton, the Tanakama Dorishle, Beim Eno Inyan Le Shabbos, Tinehu Le Inyan Ule Isirak, Tzirba Matzish. You're supposed to listen to this. So Torah says that you're not permitted to do Malacha on Shabbos, and it says, Bechorish Ubekatzer Tishbos, that when you should also not plow and not reap. So the shaila is, I mean, if Torah is telling me not to do malacha, I already know that I can't plow and I can't reap. What am I supposed to do with that particular phrase? So the Gemara darshens it for a whole variety of different things. But one of the things that the Gemara does with it is that it teaches the following idea. It teaches the idea that ma chareshushus af kutsirushus. What does it mean when the Torah says that you should not plow and you should not harvest? Just like plowing is a rishus. What does a rishus mean, Abba Say? It's optional. There's no such thing as a mitzvah, as an act of mitzvah plowing. Plowing is a non-mitzvah activity. So what is the Torah saying? Just like you can't engage in a non-mitzvah plowing, you also can't what? Engage in a non-mitzvah harvesting. Now, why is this important to us? Yotza ketzir ha-omer shehu mitzvah. But Rabbo said, what would this come to exclude? This would come to exclude a case where if there was a harvesting that was a mitzvah, you would be permitted to what? To do it even on Shabbos. What is a case of harvesting that is actually a mitzvah? That is the case of Karban HaOmer. So we'll say with the Gemara is actually just, and this is actually Halacha L'maisa. Halacha L'maisa. Remember, when would they harvest the Karban HaOmer? They would do it on the second day of Pesach. Even if the second day of Pesach fell out on Shabbos, they would still harvest the Omer itself. As I was saying, understand, that's a big machlokis. You'd be falling off your chair if it wasn't 6:10 in the morning. Right? Why? Because, again, understand, that's one of the 39 malachos. It's one of the 39 malachos. Big malachos. Chiyuv misa, if you do it intentionally. But nevertheless, the Gemara understands, Chazal understood, Torah is only coming to exclude Rishus acts of Ketzira, not mitzvah acts of Ketzira. Rabbi Shmuel Kidate. Rabbi Shmuel goes according to his reasoning, because he says, The Rabbi Shmuel to Amar, Ein ha Omer ba minat Surya. Rabbi Shmuel number one says that number one, the Omer can come from Surya, that the Omer must come from Eretz Yisrael. Kidatei do Amar yotza ktsir ha Omer shu mitzvah. So both say, Rabbi Shmuel is the one who says that whereas all other karbanos can come from Chutz La'aretz, number one, that Omer can only come from Eretz Yisrael. Once we know that Omer also has this unique aspect, we also know that Omer has another unique aspect, which is that it could even be harvested on Shabbos because it's not called the Ketzira de Rishus. It's not an optional Ketzira, it's a mitzvah Ketzira. So we'll say now the Gemara goes back to the Mishnah. Man Tana Shomri Svichis Mishriyas Notlin Scharan Mitruma Salishka. So we'll say, remember again, we saw in the Mishnah that the Tanakhama was of the opinion that Shomri Svichis Mishriyas, those who watch the aftergrowth on Shemitah. Right? Remember we pointed out in the Mishnah that they had people guarding, so to speak, barley in some of the fields to make sure that they would have something to bring for the Karban Omer because everything is hafker. So the Mishnah said that those watchmen get paid from the half shekel. So who is the opinion who says that the Shomri Svichis means literally aftergrowth? Because remember, barley, there was no barley actually planted during the Shemitah year. Rather, what ends up happening is when you harvest certain items, some of the seeds by definition, fall into the ground and they grow on their own. So it's common that even if you didn't plant a barley that year, there would always be barley that grew. So the Gemara says, who is the opinion that says that the Shomrish Svichis take their salary from the Trumas Alishka? Rabbi Shmali. It's of the opinion of Rabbi Shmal. So we'll say, because Rabbi Shmal is of the opinion that Lemaisa, once it has to go ahead and come from Eretz Yisrael, then obviously, again, you need individuals who have to be able to watch it, meaning there's no chutzlah or its option. Amar Rabbi Yosa, Divrei Akolhi. Rabbi Yosa says, no, in fact, everybody would agree that you have to pay watchmen to watch the barley. Why? Lo Matza Besurya, Mevi'en Osa Misvichen Sheveret Yisrael. We'll say a very interesting idea. Because even those who agree that Omer could come from Syria, even those who agree, also agree that what? It's always good to have a backup. Because what happens, Lemaisa, for some reason, there's no barley to be found in Syria. You want to make sure, so what's your backup? Your backup is Eretz Yisrael. So you always want to make sure that you have at least some type of, we'll call it Okarban Omer reserve. And therefore, even they would agree that you have to pay watchmen. Of course, again, going back to paying the watchmen goes back to our previous sugya about whether or not privately held property could ever actually convert into fully being seaboard property. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, Hahein Omer. So we'll say, here's what's interesting. So we just got finished saying that Lemaisa, Karban Omer is such a mitzvah that you could even harvest it on a Shabbos. What about planting it lechatchila on Shemitah? Let's say you're looking at the field and you realize, you know what, there are no svichin. There's not much, ain't nothing growing. And especially according to Rabbi Shmuel, who holds it has to come from Eretz Yisrael, there's a bit, so can you actually plant barley on Shemitah itself in order to ensure that you will have a Karban Omer? Fascinating question. So Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Boikume Rabbi Mana. So Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, asked this question in front of Rabbi Mana. Lo nimtza ke komet al shirayim she'en an echal. Is this not like a case of komet al shirayim she'en an echal? So what does this mean? If you have a Karban Mincha, so the Karban Mincha was a meal offering, a flour offering. So what happened with the Karban Mincha? Kohen would go ahead and do a kamitza. Well, actually, we'll see this in Yuma. There's a machlokes as to how the Kohen did kamitza. Did he do kamitza? Everyone agrees it's with the three middle fingers, or the three middle fingers, and you would scrape off the excess with your two side fingers. So the shayla is, did you do it like this, or did they go into the wheat, like into the flour like this? But let's say that was kamitza. That was offered up on the mizbeach, and the rest was consumed by the Kohen. Let's say lemaisa. The what we call the shrine, the leftovers, the non-kamitza part, became tame. So the halacha is that the carbon mincha is no good. Even if the kamitza is good, but the shrine, the other stuff is not good, the carbon is invalidated. So the Gemara suggests over the following. When you go ahead and you plant that barley, so the mice, you know what's going to happen? The part, see, you can't plant exactly enough barley for the carbon omer. You're obviously going to have to plant some additional amounts, but here's the problem. The part that's going to be used for the carbon omer, let's even posit for a moment that that's acceptable. What do we also know? That the other stuff that's not carbon omer is what? Is Shemitah produce that you planted on Shemitah, which is Vaday Aser. So Gemara says maybe this should be comparable to the case of the carbon mincha, where just like if the leftovers are psulim, so the mincha itself is pasul, so maybe over here also, because the leftovers are psulim, because you've been in violation of Shemitah, that the barley used for the barley used for the carbon omer would also not be good. So I'm like, no, not necessarily. So he answers, not necessarily, because there are other things, other sacrificial items, where although they cannot be consumed because they are tamei, we still allow you to go through with the sacrificial process nevertheless. Take a look at the Tikkun Charetin. Kechamisha Dvarim. Disnan v'psochim. Oh, psochim. V'omer ubeis halechem. Mikshav sham, v'hasam vaday ein shiur of ne'echolin, v'afidu hachi havi omer kasher, hachinami hachishap yimei boile. Well, say, if you remember again, the Gemara there talks about the idea that Lemaisa, there are certain sacrificial items that can be done in a state of Toma, even though what? Even though they might not be able to be consumed. So you see over here that those two things don't necessarily go hand in hand. Karban Mincha might be the exception, not the rule. Therefore, the question that's posed as to whether or not you can go ahead and plant barley for the Karban Omer is still a good question. Kate Sadoos, so we'll say now the Gemara switches gears for just a moment. The Gemara doesn't seem to answer this particular question about planting the barley on the Shemitah year itself. It just says it's a good kasha. All right. Ketzer Osa. So we'll say now, what's interesting is the following. The Mishnah said that you can go ahead and pay the Shomri Svichin from the half shekel funds. So the Shaila is, how does that work? So the Gemara says, Ketzer Osa. So we'll say, see, here's what you have to understand, is we would not take money directly out of the Beis HaMikdash and actually give it to someone. That we wouldn't do, because again, you're not going to take consecrated funds and just put them into somebody's pocket. They need to be deconsecrated in some type of formal fashion. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, Ketzer Osa, what would you do? No tell ma'os min ha'shulchani. They would take money from the money changer. Money for the money changer. But no sin l'kotun l'shomrin achal yukrava omer. So we'll say, listen to this. So what would they do? The Beis HaMikdash would actually borrow money from the money changers. From the money changers. The money changers would front the money to the Shomri Svichin. Or whoever, and we'll see, well, it's not just Shomri Svichin, it's a couple of other people also. So they would front the money to the Shomri Svichin. And what happens? Umevi ma'os mitruma salishka. So we'll say, what would happen? So the money changers would front the money to the Shomri Svichin. When the Omer was ready to actually be offered, what would happen? Then the Beis HaMikdash would go ahead and reimburse the Shulchanios. Why? Because we'll say, at that point in time, the money is viewed as actually being deconsecrated on the Karban HaOmer itself. The Karban HaOmer now is in existence, so they would, so to speak, pay for the Karban HaOmer. So the Gemara says, 1 second. The Tavos Kain, is this an acceptable process? Rabbi Acha b'shem Rabbi Ba, kol ma sheyitein hein damav, mishar yishan. We'll say, listen to this. So the Gemara says, why is this a problem? Because you have to understand something. The Karban HaOmer, you started, when you, as I just mentioned before, when these watchmen would guard the barley, so it's not just a pshat that you're guarding enough barley for the Karban HaOmer. What would they have to do? They'd have to guard much more barley. And then at the end of the day, you actually probably use very little of it for the actual Karban HaOmer. Now, I will say, the pashtos, they're getting paid for what? Guarding this, even though at the end, what? We're only using this, which then would appear that what? That the Beis HaMikdash is paying more than the actual value of the Karban HaOmer. To which the Gemara says, no. In fact, these guys worked at a shtickle of a discount. And what ended up happening is they got paid at the end of the day corresponding to what the Beis HaMikdash knew the value of the actual carbon would be. So their wages were not actually calculated by, let's say, the size of the area that they were actually watching, but instead their wages were calculated as to, at the end of the day, what the product of their watching would actually be. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Acha b'shem Rabbi Ba, so it says, that's the Gemara. Whatever they got, they actually received at the front end that which would be the value of their services at the end. So the Gemara says, Tana, af bepischei avonim came. This is also true, by the way, with the stone cutters. Ketzeru says, Rabbi again, he needed stone cutters for the Beis HaMikdash as well to actually make the edifice. So the Gemara says, what would they do? Ketzeru Ose, no tell ma'os mishulchani, v'nosim lechotzvin ulesatatin. So we'll say, listen to this. So stone cutters, what would happen? They would go ahead and these money changers were the ones essentially who fronted the money for the Beis HaMikdash. So they would go ahead and they would pay. Chotzvin are the hewers, the guys who actually hew the stone like from the quarry. And Satatin, I don't know the technical name for it. These are the guys who chisel down the stones and actually make them usable for building. What?
Chiselers.
Yeah. Wow. That's excellent. Chiselers, okay. I don't know why I couldn't think of that. All right. I'm sure there's... Okay, good. Chiselers. Okay. Chiselers. So good. So the Shulchanos would go ahead and front the money for these individuals. Actually, and this was all done even before, literally, they put a stone on the first row of the building. So meaning they actually got paid up front for all of their work. Once they went ahead and they actually began to construct the edifice, maybe ma'os mitrumas alishka umichalin aleha. They would go ahead and bring money from the trumas alishka, right? From the actual, that I will say, we'll see, this doesn't actually mean the half shekel. This is actually taken care of from other sources. And they would deconsecrate on this. We'll say, in other words, what the Gemara is saying over here is the Beis HaMikdash can't pay people. The Beis HaMikdash could purchase items. So what ends up happening is when you need to pay people, they'd have to have someone else front the money until the actual object that was going to be used for the Beis HaMikdash was actually in existence. And then the Beis HaMikdash could, in essence, pay for the item. So they would pay for the item by reimbursing the Shulchanios. So it's also an amazing, it's also, again, the transparency as well, because what ends up happening is when you pay people, often money could go in a whole variety of different directions. People sometimes don't do what they're supposed to do. By the way, in case where people didn't do what they're supposed to do, guess who suffered the loss? It wasn't the Beis HaMikdash, it was the Shulchanios. So the Beis HaMikdash could only pay for services actually rendered that actually resulted in a product. So the Barsavichin Rabbi, now again, the Gemara is the same question, but is this a good setup? After all, we'll say again, same idea. When you're, I guess, when you're quarrying or hewing stone, at the end of the day, there's a lot more effort that's expended versus the final product. The final product itself is X, but yet the effort expended is X plus Y. So the Gemara is bothered by the same question before, which is the Beis HaMikdash actually paying for more than it actually got? See, so which the Gemara says, V'chein Rabbi Yossi, Bei Rabbi Boim, V'chein B'Shmuel, to which the Gemara answers, no. Actually, what the Beis HaMikdash paid was what? Was the value of the item that they actually received. Okay, and we'll say, we'll discuss this sugya more in terms of the zvachim sugyas. We'll get to it in terms of the cost of labor and things like that. But okay, for now we're good. Says the Gemara, Yudam Adays. So we're continuing now with the items that were brought from the Truma Salishka. It's really fascinating just to see. It makes your neshama want to yearn to see the Beis HaMikdash, just how operated so efficiently and so well, which is such an anomaly for a Jewish organization. It's quite amazing. So the Gemara says the following. So the Gemara says, what else would they go ahead and spend the money of the half shekel on? Para, paraduma, sar mishtaleach, that's the goat that's sent over the cliff on Yom Kippur. The Lashon Shal Zavuris, that's the red thread. We'll see. Red thread was used in a couple of different places. Which was used this as actually referring to the thread that was suspended over the entranceway of the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Kippur. That when it turned white was symbolic, well, not symbolic, represented divine forgiveness. All of these things brought in with Truma Salishka. And I will say, one of the things that's going to be a little bit confusing and then in this next sugya is this phrase, Truma Salishka. It means different things in different places. Truma Salishka here means the half shekel. So it literally means that the half shekel would also purchase these particular items, which makes sense because these are karbanos tzibur. These are all, or not necessarily karbanos, these are all tzibur items. Kevesh para, the kevesh asir mishtaleach. So also listen to this. If you had, and she's kevesh, if you had the ramp, but also what's interesting over here is the following. They used to make a ramp. This is actually amazing. I actually saw this, not this past, 2 summers ago when I was in Eretz Yisrael. So I took an amazing tour of Har HaZeisim. And people only think Har HaZeisim is just a cemetery. It is a cemetery, but Har HaZeisim is very important because Har HaZeisim, the Mount of Olives, is where they used to do the Paraduma. So what's amazing is, here the Mishnah said there was a bridge that led from Har HaBayis, that led from Har HaBayis, onto Har HaZeisim. Why did they have a bridge? Because remember, again, the Kohen Gadol, or the Kohen, had to get from Har HaBayis to Har HaZeisim without contracting Tumah. Because obviously, if you became Tameh, the whole thing was off. So they constructed a bridge that literally ran. We'll say you could literally stand on Har HaZeisim. You could stand on Har HaZeisim, and you could look directly. Because we know again where the entrance to the Beis HaMikdash would have been based on the positioning of where the Dome of the Rock is. So you could look directly into the entranceway of the Beis HaMikdash. It is astounding. It is absolutely astounding. And this bridge, which by the way is actually must have been a pretty big bridge, extended all the way from the Har HaBayis to Har HaZeisim. That bridge and Kevesh Seir Mishtaleach, the bridge for the people who were taking out the goat. We'll say this also refers to the fact that the Mishnah Masechet, we'll get to this. Yuma is next, by the way. Very exciting. So when they used to take, there was a guy called the Ish Iti who used to take the goat on Yom Kippur day to take it out into the wilderness. So originally he used to take it out, but when he would take it out, he would get beaten up, the Gemara says. Why? Because people were pushing him to go faster. Meaning because since, again, the goat ultimately is part of the absolution process, he'd end up getting a little bit injured in the process. So what did they do? They constructed for him a bridge that essentially took him from the Har HaBayis all the way outside of Yerushalayim. So this bridge, these two bridges, the Lashon Ben Karnav, that's the red thread that was tied in between the horns of the Seir HaMishtaleach, That's the channel of water that ran through the courtyard of the Beis Hamikdash. We spoke about that before. The Beis Hamikdash itself, the Chomo Sa'ir, the walls of the city of Yerushalayim, Migdalos and its towers, the Chol Tzarchei Ha'ir, and all of the needs of the city of Yerushalayim, Ba'in Mishayari Halishka. Rabbi say all of this comes from Shir Halishka. Rabbi say Shir Halishka means what? This is the Shiraim. What's the Shiraim? And we saw this yesterday. That what happens? When they withdraw money from the different receptacles, there's always leftover shkolim. Remember, what did they do with it after they drew it out? Good, good. They put a leather covering over it to make sure that you wouldn't go back and take again from that. That's called Shiraim. The Shiraim were used for these items. Abishalom says, no, Kevesh Para, actually the ramp for the Para Duma, Kohanim Gidolim Os Mishal Atzman. The Kohanim Gidolim made from the Omer Avosai. Remember, one of the prerequisites for being in the Kohen Gadol is you had to be wealthy. You had to be wealthy. Again, and interestingly enough, if you weren't wealthy yourself, then even it was a merit-based position. So what do you do if the guy who deserved the most wasn't wealthy? They made him wealthy. It's very interesting. In order for the Kohen Gadol to have the true honor of the people, he had to be materially wealthy as well, because there are some people who only respect wealth. He had to hold honor in the eyes of everyone. It's quite amazing. So the Kohanim would go ahead and what? The Kohanim themselves, Kohanim Gedolim, would make the Kevesh from their own money. Moser Shiray Lishka. What about the leftover Chatzi Shekels? What would they do with that? Ma'u Yosin Bahan. Lochin Bahan Yenos Ushmanim Usalosos. So this is very interesting. So what would they do? They do a little bit of commerce. So they would take the leftover monies, leftover half shekels, and they would use it to purchase. They would use it to purchase. Here you could look. Let's just do this. They would use it to purchase yenos is wine, shmanim are oils, salosos are flour. So we'll say, listen to this. This is such a fascinating idea. People came to the Beis Hamikdash, and they had to bring karbanos. So what happened? Not everybody wants to schlep everything. So what was there? There was like a Beis Hamikdash gift shop. And what did they have in the Beis Hamikdash gift shop? Right, they had your oils and your wines, but like every gift shop, they sold it at what? They sold it at a nice premium. So what happened? They made a profit. Okay, you want to bring your own? You'll pay a little premium for taking it at the Beis Hamikdash gift shop. So v'haschar lehektish. And ultimately, again, that was where the Beis Hamikdash generated additional funds. Div Rabbi Shmuel, this is what the words of Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Akiva says, no way, ein mistakrin b'shel hekdesh. We do not invest consecrated money. I will say, now what? Now remember, there's a danger in that. What's the danger in that? If at the end of the day, the prices of wine, oil, and flour go down, then what? If you could lose money. So there was an interesting, by the way, this is just a fascinating tzedakah issue as well. So here you have Rabbi Shmuel saying, invest the money. Don't just let it sit there. It's going to get, what are you going to get in the temple, in the temple account, 2%? What are you going to get? So now invest it. Rabbi Kiva says, no way. We don't invest consecrated funds because, again, you're going to run the risk of a loss. Af lo mishalanim. We both say, you know where else this comes up? Tzedakah funds. Can you invest tzedakah funds? Apparently, Rabbi Shmuel would say yes. Rabbi Akiva says absolutely not. Moser HaTshuma. Then I will say, what about Moser HaTshuma? And I will say, Moser HaTshuma in this case means after they took care of all of the above mentioned needs, let's say there was still money left over. So what would they do with the money? Mahayu Osinba. What would they do with it? Mahayu Osinba. Rukui Zav Tzipui Lebeis Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Bible says it's very beautiful. We know that the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the walls were gold plated. So the gold plating over time, I guess, had to be replaced. So if there was extra money, they would use this towards the gold plating in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Rabbi Shmuel says, Moser HaPeros Keitam Izbeach. Rabbi Shmuel says, the Moser HaPeros, I will say, we don't know what this term means right now. The Gemara is going to discuss what it means. So right now, we're going to leave it undefined. But we'll call it the leftover Peros. Those go to the Keitz HaMizbeach. Well, so remember, Keitz HaMizbeach, what is Keitz HaMizbeach? We've had this term many times. Dessert, which means what? We never want the Mizbeach to be dormant. In the event that there are no carbonos, there was a carbon fund. And the carbon fund was there to be able to offer carbonos when no one else was welcome. Moser Truma, Likli Sharis. Similarly, if there was leftover Truma, I'll say over here, again, Moser Truma also means leftover Chatzi Shekel. So if there were leftover funds, what would it be used for? Likli Sharis. I will say it's also interesting. Likli Sharis means what? There were utensils, special utensils used in the Beis HaMikdash. So they would use extra money. Those had to be replaced. There was wear and tear. Those had to be replaced. Rabbi Kiva says, Moser Truma LeKeitz HaMizbeach. No. Rabbi Kiva says, any leftover monies were used for Keitz HaMizbeach. We'll call it the Mizbeach Dessert Fund. Mosar nechsachim, if there was leftover libations, Rav Asi means this is leftover monies set aside for libations, likli sharis. Those were used to replace the sacrificial utensils. Rabbi Chananya Skan HaKonim Omer. Rabbi Chananya Skan HaKonim is a very important person. Skan HaKonim means he was the assistant Kohen Gadol. Remember, there was always an assistant Kohen Gadol. There always had to be a Kohen Gadol. So in the event that something happened to the Kohen Gadol, there had to be a backup. There had to be a backup. Just so you understand who we're reading about, Rabbi Chananya Skan HaKonim was one of the Asar HaRugi Malchus. Right? So just you understand. Okay. So Rabbi Chananya Skan HaKonim says, Mosar Nesachim Keitam Mizbeach. He says that the leftover Nesachim, that was used to provide additional carbonos in the event that the Mizbeach was dormant. Mosar HaTruma, the leftover Truma over here means Chatzi Shekel, Likli Sharis. Was used to go ahead and if there had to be any repurchasing of new utensils. Ze v'ze lo hayu modim beperos. And both did not agree in the case of peros. Again, both say, we'll define what peros are in the Gemara. So the point is, you see, again, what's just fascinating about this is the systematic usage of the money. There was a hierarchy. First funds were used for A, and only once all of the initial needs were taken care of, then supplemental monies were used in very designated ways. So the Gemara goes weiter. Kevesh para, when you had this ramp that was used for para, which Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Nachum, Rishim, Rabbi Yonasan. Gimel Lashonos, so the Gemara is not actually discussing this at all. The Gemara just introduces that simply with those words. Gimel Lashonos, there were three different times that red wool and thread was used in the Beis HaMikdash. And now the Gemara gives the fact that even though it's all red and wool, they were used different weights of wool were used. Shel Seir, Seir means the Seir Meshtaleach, that is the goat that was sent into the wilderness on Yom Kippur. Besela, that had to have the weight of a sela. Shel Metzora, Beshekel, had to have the weight of a shekel. That with Metzora is one of his saras. Part of his purification process involves red wool as well. Shel Parah, the Paraduma, Beshteisloim. Rabbi Chunya, Dibras Chavrin. Rabbi Chunya, who was of the city of Chavrin, Rabbi Ba, Barzavda, B'shem, Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafda, Shal Parah B'Shteislam. They said that the red wool of the Parah Aduma was Shteislam U'mechza, was the weight of 2.5 Sela, V'istimafkin Lishna Ba'asara Zuz, and others say it was the weight of 10 Zuz. Okay? Rabbi Yehuda B'shem Rabbi Shmuel, B'shem Rabbi Shmuel, Talmidei Chachamim, listen to this. So Rabbi Yehuda, the name of Rabbi Shmuel, said the following. Talmidei Chachamim, Hamelamnin esakonim hilchos shchita. So I will say, remember, here's what's interesting. You know, Kohanim, we often assume that Kohanim just knew this stuff. The Kohanim had to go through, they had to learn extensively. Who taught them? Not necessarily other Kohanim. It's quite interesting. I mean, it could have been other Kohanim, but it could also have been other Talmidei Chachamim. So they were Rabbanim who were in charge of Kohanic, you know, CKE, you know, continuing Kohanic education. So they were Rabbanim who were in charge. They were Rabbanim who were in charge of this. So I will say, obviously, you know, also what's interesting, by the way, is fascinating, which is the clear model in the Beis HaMikdash is pay. Why? Because when you pay people for things, they will produce higher results. Well, you can't get somebody to volunteer their time to come in and give a shir for the Kohanim, right? It's a covet. It's a covet for you. You know, it's a very nice covet. At the end of the day, you want service, pay for service. So the Rabbanim who taught the Kohanim, Hilchos Shchita, Hilchos Kabbalah, Hilchos Zrika, all of these laws, the laws of receiving the blood, the laws of sprinkling the blood, Notin Scharan Mitrumas Halishka. Rabbosai, they got paid from the leftover half shekels. So after, again, the initial half shekel withdrawals, remember the Shirayim? They got paid from the Shirayim. Rabbi Yitzchak Baradifa B'Shem Rabbi Ami, Mevakrei Mume Kodshim, Notin Scharan Mitrumas Halishka. Similarly, Rabbosai, again, remember, there was a whole team of experts employed by the Beis HaMikdash to check Mumin. Right, remember, they shechted a carbon. There was a shalat. Remember, a Kohen can't do everything. There had to be a support team. So let's say, again, they shech the animal, there's something on the lungs. Is it a good carbon? Is it not a good carbon? They had Rabbanim on hand. Again, I don't know if they were Kohanim, they weren't Kohanim. I don't think they had to be Kohanim. But there were individuals who were there who were experts. So they had to be on staff. So where were they paid for? They were also paid from Trumas Alishka. Rabbi Acha, Rabbi Tanchum Barchia, Bishin Rabbi Smaloi. Magiye Sefer HaAzara. Similarly, again, those Rav Osai who kept up, there was a Sefer Torah, kept in the Azara. That Sefer Torah was the Sefer Torah from the times of Ezra. That Sefer Torah required upkeep, so there was somebody in charge of that Sefer. So that person was also on the payroll. Notlin Schar Mitshuma Salishka. All these individuals were paid from the leftovers of the half shekel. Gidel Bar Binyamin Bishin Rabbi Asi, Shnei Dayoni Gizelos, Notlin Scharon Mitshuma Salishka. Similarly, Rabbi will say, interestingly enough, there were two Dayanim, two judges, who were kept on, who were also kept on staff to deal, to adjudicate Choshen Mishpat, monetary cases. Those, and they sat in the Shulchan Aruch, the chamber of human stone. Those individuals were also on the Beis HaMikdash payroll. Shmuel Amar Shmuel says, Nashim Har'ogos Beparoches, Notlin Scharon Mishpat Salishka. The women who used to weave, Rabbi said, the curtains. Remember, again, there were very intricate curtains, especially between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So remember, over time, stuff happens. Stuff happens. Either it begins to age, or there's a run in the fabric, or whatever it is. So again, the women who had to take care of the parochas of the curtain were also paid from the Trumas Alishka. Rabbi Chuna Amar Mitrumas Bedek Habayis. Rabbi Chuna says, no. They were not paid from the Trumas Alishka. They are paid from the Trumas Bedek Habayis. Also, these are two different funds. Trumas Alishka is the Chatzi Shekel fund. Bedek Habayis is what? They had a building fund. Literally a building fund, or there's a better term, not a building fund, a maintenance fund, an upkeep fund. Okay, so what's this? The Gemara says, what's the machlok? It's maplegi. Shmuel avilok yakarba. Rav Huna avilok kibinyan. So Rav Shmuel says that the curtain itself almost has the status of a karban. It's in the Kodesh, has the status of a karban, therefore they paid it from a karban fund, i.e. chatzi shekel fund, whereas Rav Huna, whoever it is, holds that what? I'm not saying whoever, meaning there's two different yourselves. Rav Huna holds that, no, it's part of the building. I'm sorry?
It's an operating fund.
Good. It's part of the building, and therefore it comes out of the operating fund. So, you okay?
Yeah,
all right. It's the last time I'm standing there. Right. So the rest of the fight. Amar Rav Chizkiya, Tana Rabbi Yehuda, God Godus. So Rabbi Yehuda God Godus, that's his name, says the following. Haktores, b'chol karbanos hatzib, or the ktores and all sacrificial items, bo'im mitshumas halishka. All come, Rabbi said, from the chatzi shekel. That's not a chiddush. We've seen that before. Mizbeach hazav, b'chol kli sharis, bo'im mimos v'nasach. Rabbi said, Mizbeach hazav. Mizbeach Hazav is the incense, is the Ketores Mizbeach, or Kol Kli Sharis. It also means, let's see again, there was upkeep that was needed. Where did the money for that upkeep come from? That came from additional libation monies. Mizbeach Ha'ola is the large outer Mizbeach that was used for actual animal sacrifice. Vahechal Vahazoros, and any repairs needed to the courtyards or to the actual structure itself. Bo'in Mishiyori Halishka, ultimately come from the leftover Shkalim. Chutz la'azaros, anything outside of the actual temple compound, meaning let's say upkeep for Yerushalayim. Rabbi says, it's amazing. The Beis HaMikdash not only took care of the Beis HaMikdash, it took care of the city. So what about repairs to the city? Bo'in milishkas bedek habayis. That so Rabbi says, interestingly enough, so the building fund for the Beis HaMikdash didn't just take care of the Beis HaMikdash, it took care of the city of Yerushalayim. V'hatani. But we learned that the stones on the Mizbeach, the Hechel and the Azoros, you could commit Me'ilah with it. But is there actual Me'ilah when it comes to Shirayim? So we'll say again, remember what the Gemara is saying over here is, if indeed they come from the leftover Shkalim, those are called Shirayim, there's no Mi'ilah with Shirayim, which means again, so the Gemara says on one hand, we say that the stones of the Mizbeach, the Hechal and the Azaros, the fact that the stones of the Mizbeach, we understand, but the stones of the Hechal and the Azaros, those stones came, and especially the Azaros, the courtyard, from Shirayim. There's no Mi'ilah with Shirayim, to which the Gemara says, Eli Rabbi Meir, we saw this actually yesterday, to Rabbi Meir, Amar Meir says, Molin b'Shirayim, there is Mi'ilah with Shirayim. But even Rabbi Meir says there's only Me'ilah with Shirayim when the year, within the year that they've actually been collected. And yet what? Here, these items obviously remain in existence, even what? Even these items remain in existence even after the year. Rav Chizkiya, Tan Rav Yehuda, God Gadus, God Gad Ganios, Hashulchan, Vahamenor, Vahmizbechos, Vahparoches, Ma'akvinas Akavaras. I'm also saying the Gemara goes ahead and adds in an additional piece over here. That's what? That the actually, I will say we'll stop over here for today. Let me just go back. Actually, no, let's read it one more. So Amar Rav Chizkiya, Tan Rav Yehuda, God Ganios, Hashulchan, Vahamenor, Vahmizbechos, the Shulchan, Menorah, and Mizbech, Vahparoches, Ma'akvinas Akavaros, Liv Rabbi Meir. So I will say the absence of any of these items would prevent the Karbonos from being effective. Rabbi Meir, these words are Rabbi Meir. The Chum say, "In lecha ma'akives hakarbon ella." Well, so you have to change the skirsa to karkov and kar and keren. The only things that are ma'akiv a karbon are karkov and keren. I will say, what does that mean? Karkov refers to the band that would go around the mizbeach. It was like a decorative band, and keren refers to the fact that on all four corners of the mizbeach there was like a keren. Literally means a horn. It means a protrusion. The corners were actually raised. So the Chachamim say that even if you're missing everything else, as long as the Mizbeach itself is intact, in that it has its band and that it has its corners that are raised, that Lemaisa, it's okay. It's okay. So the Gemara says, V'chein v'lochein amr abalaz, v'lochein amr abalaz of Rabbi Yossi Rachanina, Trehon amrin, kol hein dechsiv nochach ma'akev, tsela ina ma'akev. So we'll say, "Va'am Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman b'shem Rabbi Yonasan afilu tzelanakev." We'll say, "What's the fundamental machlokes?" The fundamental machlokes is the following: that what is ma'akev in the Beis Hamikdash? Rabbi Eli, for Karbonos, I should say. Rabbi Lez, Rabbi Yaakov say that anything that says nochach, anytime the Torah says opposite means that item has to be there in order for the carbon to be effective. And the other saying, but if it says tzela means what? Or tzela means on the side of. If it just says it's on the side of, that's not ma'akiv. The other opinion says no. Even if it says on the side of, it's still ma'akiv as well. As I will say, we'll continue with the sugya tomorrow.